the ANews podcast. This is episode 114. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on Anarchist News. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information on usually some good commentary, go to the nonsectarian anarchistnews.org.
Editorial.
My thoughts about drugs were formed by Andrew Weil back in the 80s. His book, Chocolate to Morphine, brings up many of the points that I still find most significant. First of all, that there is no clear line between food and medicine, or food and drugs, or medicine and drugs. And then that all humans use drugs, see point A, but that usage in today's modern world is entirely different, culturally, physically, and chemically, from traditional usage, when substances were nowhere near as refined as what modern pharmacy brings us. And of course, the work I did with drug users clarified my rejection of drugs in general, and alcohol in particular. I think people can use appropriately, but this entire culture, which promotes externalities, substances, people, others of various sorts, jobs, as solutions to our most intimate problems, tends away from what one might call a healthy relationship with them. I have also been known to say that I am too much of a control freak, aka control addict, to use substances on the regular. My rejection of drugs for myself has as much or mostly to do with wanting to be self-sufficient and less vulnerable, both of which are other ways of saying in control, obviously. But I can see some leftover leftism in that, too. If I define leftism as being ready and rational and avoiding getting popped for things that aren't important to me, like illegal substances, you know, leftism can have an expansive definition. One could also talk about generational trends. I was a child of hippies, so of course I tended away from drugs, even the cocaine of the 80s and the constant of coffee. What generational consequences might there be to the increased usage of pot these days? What did it mean to have prisons allow and then deny prisoners access to cigarettes? How are drugs one more way that we're influenced by a world that hates us? And how are drugs ways for a deeper world to talk to us? One could argue that drugs are one of the better refutations of what Athens Indie Media this week called the logic of capital, aka efficiency. Although, of course, I'm not sure that efficiency is really anarchists' biggest problem. I guess there are micro problems and macro problems. That sounds about right. I can end this with that thought. You tell me, write the taste. Give us next and passion. You tell me, it comes to me. Tell me you wanna be different. Give just chance for a sign. You tell me it's only natural. What's new this week? May Day ACG roundup from Anarchist Communist Group. What the headline says: actions in Leicester, West Yorkshire, London, and selling of newspapers. In London, quote, the main other groups, apart from trade unions and a few labor/momentum lot, were Communist Party of Britain, Morning Star, and the Communist Party of Great Britain, Marxist-Leninist, who don't seem to like each other, unquote. Lol.
Brussels, brief report of the trial against anarchists persecuted by the Belgian state from Act for Freedom. Very brief, mostly gives info on the sentences that the prosecution/persecution is requesting for the 12 defendants. Blah. All of the accused rejected work sentences, so sounds like they're sticking together. Not blah.
May Day in Helsinki, against authority, fascism, and capitalism, from avtonomen.org. A short report back. Quote, between 11 and 12, around 450 to 500 demonstrators with black and red flags, everything belongs to you banner, and other banners and posters gathered near the metro station Hakaniemi. Among the demonstrators, there were Russian-speaking activists from the Comrades Network, Finnish anarchist group ARIMA, and Kurdish activists with flags and posters. The participants communicated, exchanged news, distributed literature and leaflets, unquote.
Argentina. Anarchist prisoner Anahi Salcedo is finally receiving medical treatment, from mpolothia.net. Update from this torture survivor who continues to suffer from the state. Quote, Anahi's injuries are irreversible. She is recovering from a reconstruction operation to the right side of her face, the amputation of several phalanges, and a fracture of the left clavicle. She is suffering from a facial infection caused by the prosthesis and needs another operation to remove it. Instead, they pumped her up with antibiotics for over 30 days in a row that have caused havoc to her stomach. She has stitches and brackets on her gums that hurt her mouth, so she can only have a liquid diet, which has not been given to her for all this time. She is surviving thanks to the food sent from comrades and her family who remain in solidarity, unquote. This update is very explicit about anarchist expectations and a rejection of photos, which I found intriguingly out of step with the U.S. Quote, we do not expect the state to act any differently than how it does. We are not victims of anything. We do not ask or wait for justice. We do not publish the photos of anyone, and we do not want it to be done. Down with the walls of the prisons. There are no specifics about how to help her, even on the original site, as far as I can tell. Sad face.
Breaking the sword of capital, hanging over Exarchia, from Athens Indie Media. I continue to be stoked that there is more writing coming out of Greece these days, even if it's still not that much. This is a snapshot of Exarchia today, including fewer women on the streets, which it posits, reasonably, as a phase in the increasing conservatism, aka nationalism, of the location, which includes also more mafia activity. The piece calls for a war against efficiency, as the logic of the state. Not sure I agree, but it's an argument. Quote, how does manic capital squeeze the last drop of profit out of its own neighborhoods? Efficiency. Turning every slice of public space into potential profit. No matter how small, everything needs to be commodified. Many anarchists believe this is more of the same, but it is in fact new. The state of capitalism itself is in crisis due to an inability to create mass profit. The sword is turned inward at us, unquote.
Statement from Fédération Anarchiste, French-speaking Anarchist Federation, from London Anarchist Federation. Quote, an anarchist comrade was violently attacked with a knife the afternoon of May 2nd, 2019 in the F.A. Bookshop Publico, Paris. There is nothing to suggest the attack was targeting him in particular, but rather the organization he represents and to which he belongs, the Fédération Anarchiste. We will not let ourselves be threatened, intimidated, or assaulted with impunity. We will keep on struggling and spreading our political messages, which are without doubt disliked by some in these times of struggle, unquote.
May Day actions across so-called North America from its going down. Many actions, much outrage, continent-wide. Quote, this May Day was marked by everything from mass wildcat strikes by teachers across South Carolina, demonstrations against ICE in Portland, a noise demo outside of a jail in New York, student occupations and walkouts in Baltimore, New York, and Portland, and also clashes with the far right in Portland and New York. Anarchists, wobblies, and autonomous anti-capitalists of many stripes also held benefit events, barbecues, and participated in larger marches across the so-called U.S., unquote. At least anarchists were having barbecues.
Indonesia, May Day clashes in Bandung, over 200 arrests, detainees tortured, from umpolothia.net. Very short, a few pictures, a brief video, and a tweet. Quote, police have been using excessive force and abused May Day protesters in Bandung, West Java. More than 200 protesters were arrested, beaten, kicked, shaved, stripped naked. Nothing could justify such abuses, unquote.
Kazakhstan, anarcho-communist sentenced to 15 days for banner, from umpolothia.net. Yes, people, 15 days for a banner that didn't even have any cussing on it. Our future? Quote, on April 21st, activists hung two banners on the central avenue of the city during a marathon run. The banners read, you can't run away from the truth, and I have a choice. Azia and Bebaris were found guilty of organizing an unsanctioned political rally and put in prison for 15 days. The next day, three witnesses were fined for filming what happened. The convicted activist Bebaris identifies himself as an anarcho-communist, unquote.
Out soon, a towering flame, from freedomnews.org.uk. Anarchist history is full of intrepid anarchists, from the Elephant Edition biographies of Jacob, DiGiovanni and Sabate, to Saudi, Bono, and the others recounted in Without a Glimmer of Remorse, to Enrico Arrigoni, aka Frank Brand, etc., to Ravishal, to Novatore and Bruno Filippi, just off the top of my head. Here is another chapter in that history, the story of Peter the Painter, the successful escapee after the shooting of three London cops in the early 1900s. John Patton gives a positive review of A Towering Flame by anarchist-slash-historian Philip Ruff. Quote, A Towering Flame has a large cast, from artists and political leaders to B to a KGB Atom spy. At times, following the lives of those caught up in the London events gives us a Latvian history of the 20th century. Both Jacob Peters, acquitted in 1911, and Zaklis's old comrade Christopher Solnin went on to play major roles in the Soviet regime after 1917. Unquote.
May Day 2019 in Paris. We are not giving up. From CrimeThink. So regular listeners will know that I have mixed feelings about the reporting done by CrimeThink, and here we go again. This piece points out that writers for CrimeThink have done pieces for years on France, so that they have a good context for socio-political analysis. One must be prepared to accept that claim on the face of it. Then this article says, quote, "The authorities fear these informal alliances and the increasing phenomenon of rioting as a form of political action. If more and more demonstrators continue embracing our tactics, refusing to disassociate themselves from the most radical elements, and engaging in property destruction and street confrontations against police forces, the government won't be able to continue to fool people with the classic argument that dangerous rioters wearing all black are threatening the safety of normal demonstrators and the lives of good citizens to justify its brutal repression," unquote. This assessment is so laughably inadequate. Government as unprepared to use far more violent tactics, and to win we just need more people to do what we do, to name an error and a fallacy, respectively, that it throws into doubt everything else in the reporting. YMMV. In fact, I hope it does.
Indonesia posts May Day update and call for international solidarity from Abolition Media Worldwide. An overview of actions for May Day and the police responses to the same. In one place, quote, "There was a peaceful action by a group of anarchists almost 1,000 strong. It even consisted of mothers, children, and teenage girls. Police attacked them and broke the block into two groups. They were then chased, beaten, and arrested. The pretext for this was that some spray-painted graffiti. Many of those who were arrested were stripped and had their heads shaved. Some were spray-painted on their faces and bodies as well. Many were forced to crawl along the road in their underwear. In total, 619 anarchists were arrested. Of these, 3 still remain in custody for destruction of property," unquote. There is info for money to be sent to support those targeted.
Iranian anarchist prisoner Sohail Arabi severely beaten by prison guards. From freedomnews.org.uk. Arabi has been on AIM News before, when he wrote from prison a text supporting women. Quote, "Sohail has experienced prison torture in the past. Most recently, he was summoned, interrogated, and severely beaten for his connection with the letter he wrote from the Greater Tehran prison about the condition of the prisoners in Fashafoya, Greater Tehran prison. In result, he has suffered an injury to his groin. Following the hospital visit, he was returned to prison without treatment. He was also denied access to a telephone and visitors," unquote. No info on how to contact him or how to help. Bad news all around.
Review, Setting Sights, from C4SS by Kevin Carson. Another super posy review this week, this time for a book edited and with one essay by Scott Crowe. Carson does a good job of beginning a discussion on the ambivalence that most non-pacifist anarchists are likely to feel about this topic, on the one hand rejecting the idea that individuals' ability to protect ourselves should be limited by the main bully in our lives, on the other hand, rejecting gun rights activists as mostly reactionary, bigoted forces of white supremacy and patriarchy, among other things. The only authors mentioned in this review are Crow and Ward Churchill, who wrote the introduction, but the essays are from mostly non-anarchists, some well-known, and organizations like Black Lives Matter. Quote, "In his kickoff essay, Crow emphasizes, among other things, the anarchist principles that should guide armed community self-defense. That the armed component should never become the center, and it should never be aimed at taking state power," unquote. Mm-hmm.
"Politics as we know it should die, and loving anarchy should prosper." From Metro. Surely no one expects anything anarchist from a source called Metro, right? Article in mainstream media says anarchism can be peaceful and truly democratic and is the only answer for a safe future. Maybe the folks at agencies see this as a triumph. Moving on.
Radical Posture, from Dog Section Press by Josh McPhee. This short piece raises some brutal questions as it challenges self-expression and art as the latest specific categories to join the co-opted. Quote, "Meanwhile, merry 60s and 70s anarchist experiments like Provo, white bikes, hippie crash pads and communes, digger free stores, and alternative economic experiments have been weaponized by technological developments and venture capitalists. Airbnb, corporate city bike programs, co-worker development schemes, Zipcar, Groupon, TaskRabbit, and Uber are not simply built on the ruins of our utopias, but quite literally out of their very fabric. While the counterculture built their projects out of the exploration of new and exciting ways to build communities and push the boundaries of what can be accomplished through collectivity and sharing, the gig economy empties out the very ontology of these ideas, invisibilizing relationships and exploitation in order to extract profit, all the while maintaining the skin of liberatory activity or freedom, unquote. I can't disagree with anything there, except maybe his implication that anything we come up with will not be subverted by the dominant paradigm, as he acknowledges, quote, I can't say I know what to do about it, unquote.
Audio and video. Anarchy Radio, May 7th, 2019. An hour. Three things about this episode. One, that there were two anarchist calls, both of which provided their own commentary. Two, that Jay-Z read something of his that criticizes Emma for not rejecting the Bolsheviks quickly enough, not, quote, when it counted, unquote. And three, that Jay-Z criticizes Wallace Wells' book, The Uninhabitable Earth, for not saying what to do about the problem or how the problem started. To which I can only say, refer to the entry on Anarchy Radio in last week's A News podcast. Other than that, a standard episode.
Final straw, Antifa plus Anarchy Down Under, an hour and 40 minutes. Quote, this week we're sharing a recent conversation with Andy Fleming. Andy is an anarchist and anti-racist organizer based out of Melbourne, Australia. For the episode, Andy tells us about his research into far-right organizing in Australia and, to a lesser degree, Aotearoa, aka New Zealand, who key players are, what tendencies are present, and their influence in popular and political culture. We also speak about the resistance to the far right, Australia's immigration policies, settler colonial status, cultural context for far-right organizing in Australia, and a bit about government counterinsurgency-style repression of radical left, ecological, and indigenous movements in Australasia, unquote.
IGD Podcast, Inside the Growing Indonesian Anarchist Movement, 57 minutes. Quote, in this episode of the It's Going Down podcast, we speak with two anarchists from Indonesia about the growing movement, its history, both in the colonial period and in the aftermath of the post-Suharto era. Our guests discuss how the movement, made up of a variety of tendencies, organizations, networks, and formal and informal organizations, is growing across the country. Unquote.
Anarchy Bang, a memes episode, 2 hours. Nettle, Aragorn, and Dominique are joined by Jason McQuinn. Schmuckface made excellent points, drawing a comparison between memes and advertisements, and as a DIY propaganda form and fetishization. Otherwise, the usual interesting conversation, although it's too bad that Jason's level of input did not match his level of experience and information. In other words, he has a lot to say and didn't say much. While that is probably better than saying too much, there's a large happy medium which perhaps will get inhabited next time. Otherwise, A insists that memes are inevitably selling something, if only a perspective, and Dominique is positive. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This week, we're talking about drugs. As an anarchist, what do you think about drugs and drug use in the radical community and society at large? What is your relationship to drugs like? How have drugs shaped, or not, your approach to anarchist ideas? What can we do as anarchists to help our friends and family make it through some difficult drug-related issues, like anarchist alternatives to Alcoholics Anonymous, needle exchanges, the opioid crisis, and other resources to help through dark times? In your idyllic anarchist bolo, what would drugs look like?
Well, as a diet, you know, and food you would eat, as well as whatever habits people have in their lives. You know, some habits, some things you consume in one form or another can be helpful in certain circumstances and for certain people, and other times not. And so I think the best approach is to, for one, not forbid, but then also try to have as much of a balanced, open understanding and dialogue and, you know, real supportive relationships with people where you can talk about how is X, Y, or Z affecting you and what's your experience like and all that.
Okay. Well, let's have it out a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know these people that can do this, like in the real world. It seems like your anarchism is in a different world, like an imaginary world.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd say anarchism in general is an imaginary world.
Oh, really?
But it's one that we would, you know, like to see implemented and become more reality as best we can. But no, I think what I'm talking about here is like trying to have as much self-understanding as you can, you know, self-understanding of your own emotional state, as well as your own physical state, and then other people and resources that can help you better understand yourself, your emotional state, your physical state, etc. And so this, in addition to self-understanding, is having like real open, transparent relationships between people. You know, people basically talking with each other and talking openly and candidly with each other, and not being afraid to ask difficult questions.
But isn't it difficult to talk openly with people if they're on drugs?
It all depends. You know, for some people, they can become really open and really communicative, and other people shut down. And
so you think it's about a person-to-person thing, not about a particular kind of drug or...
Yeah, it's a person-to-person or person-by-person and moment-by-moment kind of thing too, as well. And so it's very individualized, very based on the specifics of context and situation.
So I guess, I mean, well, it's funny to be so positive about it, about a topic that's so big. I guess it's appropriate to sort of say, for the context of a conversation like this, what have your experiences with drugs been that you're so positive about them?
I'm not necessarily saying that. Yeah, I'm saying that it can be positive and it can be negative. And even like for one person on one trip, there could be some elements that are positive and some elements are negative. And so it's just kind of try to deal with things as they come, as well as try to have as much understanding of the drug and the person and what they're going through to try to anticipate problems, you know, before they arrive, or find ways to deal with problems as they arrive.
You're being evasive. And is that because you fear talking about this subject on while being recorded?
I mean, I don't want to go like too much into experiences, but
you could talk about your personal experiences without talking about your personal experiences.
What is it? Like, okay, a drug phrase I've heard before that I like a lot, it's called a set and setting. So that's kind of what I'm getting at right here. The set being the mindset. Like, what is your mindset? Like, for example, if you have, like, a lot of emotional traumas and issues and hangups and stuff, some, like, psychedelic drugs, for example, could, like, bring that up. And if you don't have that kind of self-awareness that you have these traumas and stuff, then the psychedelics could, like, bring it up and... you're totally unprepared, you know? And this is why I'm saying, like, the self-understanding is important ahead of time so that you're not blindsided by that kind of thing.
But, isn't the first experience you have still going to blow your mind and still be a trip no matter how much conversing you have ahead of time?
No, not really. Like, for example, with psychedelics again, right? I remember the first couple times I've done psychedelics, and... they were big, crazy things, but they weren't as big and crazy for me as my first real meaningful friendship. That was had way more, you know, emotional and life-changing impacts than my first drug experiences. And same thing, like, with sexual experiences, etc., you know, it can be, like, way more powerful than like, drug experiences. So, yeah, it's just, but for other people, it's another way around, you know. And so I think the better thing is to try to, you know, have as much self-understanding as possible and try to have as much social context, the setting aspect, you know, in the phrase set and setting, the have a good, strong social setting, have a good environment. Like, for example, like psychedelic drugs, you know, bringing that up again, which I guess is probably what people think about a lot with drugs, is that if you're in a setting where, like, there's a lot of people, a lot of noise, a lot of activity or what have you, or dangers, then that's a physical setting that's not conducive for that kind of experience. And so, yeah, just like, you know, ask these questions and stuff. And I don't really put as much like stock or faith in like the drugs per se as being like the thing that will have big changes in people's lives. It's, I just see it as one component along with all these other things too.
In your idyllic anarchist bolo, what would drug use look like?
Uh, it well, would
it sounds like it would definitely be a part of people's lives.
Well, if people want to. Yeah, I mean, I don't like the idea of like trying to force drugs onto people if they don't want it.
So what you're saying is that you wouldn't strap people into chairs and force them to take drugs.
Yeah, or inject them and what have you. Yeah.
That's a really interesting
No, I mean,
very controversial.
Well, like sometimes people have experiences with drugs that are really meaningful for them, and then they universalize that experience on everyone else, and they say, oh, if this had this effect on me, it's going to have the same effect on everyone else. So, you know, they become really pushy and obnoxious of, oh, you got to do it, or why aren't you doing this, oh, you got to do it. And if people don't want to, or if they're not ready for it, then yeah, they're on their own path, you know. And don't try to assume that drugs or whatever philosophy you're into is right for that person at that time.
So I guess, I mean, what you're saying sort of by absence is that you don't like the idea of anarchists that have, of bolos, yeah, as having principles at all.
No, I like the standard anarchist principles, right? Free association, equality, you know, freedom, baby, all that kind of stuff. You know, really respecting each other's autonomy.
But part of the conceit of the bolo form is that each bolo has its own sort of cultural values and expressions.
Oh, yeah. So then you can totally have druggy bolos or bolos based on specific drugs that people specifically like. But drugs, I mean, the whole thing, it becomes so blurry after a while, right? Because two drugs that I'm an addict of, I'll admit it, you know, is caffeine and sugar. You know, I consume them all the time. And I totally notice the effects it has on my body when I take them and when I don't take them. And so, I would say it's totally a drug, but then that's a thing that people don't usually consider to be drugs. And you can extrapolate this into other aspects of like food and diet as well, the effects it has on people's bodies and minds and such. So, yeah, you know, so I'm trying to bring more complexity into the issue too.
Except you're not. Like, everyone in the world agrees with these topics. I mean, everyone agrees that caffeine is a drug. Everyone agrees of, you know, that basically by any definition, food is a drug.
Yeah.
The purpose of that seems to be, And I'm going to say this as a person who essentially is against drugs and taking drugs, and my friends taking drugs, and me being in a context where drugs are being taken.
Yeah.
It seems like you're basically blurring the edges so that you can take drugs. It's like I'm talking to a liberal or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the liberal creep is coming in and infecting me. Yes. Yeah.
With your Mary Jane.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think there's validity to it. For example, alcohol, bringing that in, right? That's another thing, too. I mean, you can talk about all the ways that people have used it and it's negatively affected their lives. And I think that's important to acknowledge that it affects people's lives negatively at times. And not to view it as like, oh, other drugs are better or that alcohol should be banned, but just like acknowledging, you know, this is a recurring problem that a lot of people have, and let's acknowledge it and find out how we can better relate to it, you know?
And for everything that we spend an hour on, we don't spend an hour on something else.
Yeah.
So how is it that drugs and the hours that you've spent on drugs improved your life that wouldn't have been improved in other ways?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so like one example then would be like marijuana. Like there have been times in my life that by taking it or not taking it, like realizing like how closed off I become, like emotionally, or closed off to other people. And so that would be a case, for example, that some personal insight, you know, can come about as a result of it. And then the negative effect too, like realizing at times, like by taking it, I just get sloppy thinking, I can become more lazy, and that's a negative aspect of it. And so like, there are effects that happen, positive and negative. And the best thing is to be aware of it and try to be as open and honest as you can. And if like problems arise as a result of it, to try to have supportive social structures around you so that you could work through these problems, ideally speaking, right?
I mean, mostly I'm just cracking up because your responses are so safe here.
Safe. Well, like, I mean, like I can also talk about like a cousin of mine that died from a heroin overdose. I mean, that happens too.
The reason, of course, why I like the Bolo example to this question is because the Bolo has certain consequences. In other words, like part of what I like about the Bolo idea is that it's establishing cultural choices that make sense in the context of the Bolo that you're in.
Yeah.
We live in this permissive society that sort of has lots of faux, not permissiveness, but mostly it's this permissive society.
Yeah.
And that basically your answer to the question sort of assumes that, let's say in the context of an anarchist Bolo, that an anarchist society would just be a permissive society. And it reminds me of that classic cartoon of the woman in the hijab walking one direction and a woman in the bikini walking the other direction. And they both basically thought bubbled towards the other.
Yeah.
That they're trapped by their cultural context.
Yeah.
You know, they actually like share a word like objectify bitch or something like that. And I guess it's sort of what you're saying is that in your mind there isn't an option for no drugs. You've just chosen options that are about making informed choices and being responsible.
Maybe in the sense, like if you go back permissive. to the whole thing of like the blurred lines and stuff, then you could say, yeah, man, it's all drugs, right? Like, you know, eating and breathing and stuff, and it's drugs in some form or another, chemicals in some form. Yeah, but...
I mean, that also compares to a science fiction story that says that we're all like the humans are a barely cognizant vector for bacteria or fermentation to happen or something like that.
Oh, yeah, because all the bacteria that's in our bodies, we're just providing a space for them. back to the permissiveness thing, right? So I would say this goes back to anarchism or a stateless society or freedom in general, that like, yeah, okay, say you have total freedom, no government, but that doesn't mean that, like, you know, all choices are good choices. Right. And so that includes, you know, alcohol, drugs of whatever kind, you know, that doesn't mean it's necessarily a good choice for you. But it all, going back to the whole individual specific thing, right? Maybe for some person at some point in their life, one particular kind of drug would be a good option. And at other points, it's not a good option. You know, like going into like the how things change and people change, situations change, etc. But I wouldn't go, I'm not really the kind of person, I don't really want to recommend like any drug except coffee saying that it's universally good, you know? I mean, it's really, it's up to the individual taste, their individual situation. And even the whole thing like with recommendations, for example, that goes back to the whole thing, you can recommend stuff, but pushing stuff on people, whatever it be, you know, drugs, medications, you know, or coffee, just, it doesn't help, you know, pushiness. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Dim. What's New was written by Jackie and read by Chisel and Dim. Editorial is written by Chisel. We thank Aragorn and Friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room, linked to on owners.